thank you for coming. Before I welcome and introduce our two speakers, because I will immediately forget otherwise, let me start with two announcements about our future forthcoming events. So our next event is on Thursday, 3rd of March. We're screening a documentary film, The Agreement, which relates to the agreement in the Kosovo-Serbia dialogue. That is going to be on the 3rd of March, Thursday at 6:30 at the New Academic Building of LSE. And registration is required by Eventbrite, I think. And then our next research seminar is by Dr. Bernard Cassi on pension reform in the Balkans and their neighbors on the 15th of March in 3 or 4 Tuesdays from now, possibly in this room. So two events, 3rd of March, Thursday, 15th of March, Tuesday, put them in your agendas. Now, galloping on to present our speakers, it's a pleasure to have here Sanja Kmezić and Jadranka Kaluđorević with my fantastic accent. They, as you will see, they will talk on the issue of fiscal decentralization and local government financing in Serbia and Montenegro. They have been working on this project, I believe, partly under the mentorship of Will Bartlett, who is a fellow here at the Research Unit on Southeast Europe, and in collaboration with the RRPP in the Balkans, but also LSE Enterprise here at the LSE, obviously. The project is part of wider collaborative work that both LSE, LSE and LSE Enterprise in particular are hoping to cultivate increasingly over the years with institutions in the region. And we maybe want to have a claim that part of the interest on issues of fiscal decentralization came long ago. Sometime in 2009, we organized a conference in the region exactly on the topic, and a book was published sometime later. So we have a long interest on issues of fiscal decentralization and regional development, obviously, in the region. So we're very happy to have these two speakers talking to us on this topic today. Sanja is lecturer for the interdisciplinary joint master's program in Southeastern European Studies at the University of Graz, and she's also affiliated and co-founder of the European Research Academy in Belgrade, a non-profit think tank there. Jadranka is assistant professor at the Faculty for International Economics at the University of Donja Gorica in Montenegro, and she's also director of the Institute for Strategic Studies and Prognosis also in Montenegro. Both of them, they have a very long experience in running projects for different funding bodies in the region, including the USA, the European Union, and other organizations. And I'll stop my introductions here. I will pass the floor to you to talk to us about fiscal decentralization in the region.
Thank you, Dr. Manasiliotis, for introducing us. And we would also like to thank LSE Enterprise and LSE Center on Southeast Europe and the European Institute for inviting us here and giving us opportunity to present our research study on fiscal decentralization and local government financing. So today's presentation on fiscal decentralization and local government financing is based on the 2-year-long research study that was implemented by EURAC Belgrade within the framework of the Swiss-funded regional research promotion program in the Western Balkans. And besides Jadranka and myself, we also have two colleagues here who participated with us in this study, Katarina Djulic and Mija Tjocevic. So I will first tell you what will be the content of our presentation. So first we will explain you what's the subject matter of the study. We will explain our motivation for doing such a research and to explain the context and problems that Serbia and Montenegro face, and what was our focus, what were our research questions. We will then explain an analytical approach and research methods applied. And finally, I'll focus on the case study of Serbia, and Jadranka will focus on the case study of Montenegro, by explaining the context, our analysis, and major findings and conclusions. So, as the title of our presentation says, the focus, the subject matter of our study was the process of fiscal decentralization in these two countries that started back in early 2000s, and we've covered the time span of these 15 years from 2000 to 2015. We focused on the changes on the model of local government financing in these two countries and the reforms and changes that took place in this time span of 15 years. And finally, we also focused on intergovernmental fiscal governance and basically on institutional relations between central and local government level in managing, in governing fiscal relations. So I must note that our study is primarily legislative and policy study. It's a legal study and policy study that primarily focuses on the quality and the content of the legal framework of the fiscal decentralization process and the legal framework on local government financing. And we also try to track all the changes that occurred during these 15 years and their fiscal effects on local government revenues and expenditures. Finally, we also focused on the role of different stakeholders in the process, so on institutional aspects and the role of, for instance, donor community in the process, on the role of local governments and their associations, on the role of different ministries and central government agencies, and so on. So why? What was our motivation? Why are we doing this research? So both countries have, although they look completely differently, Serbia and Montenegro, they face some similar problems. They have overdeveloped capital city, and in case of Montenegro, like Jadranka will explain later, Montenegro has overdeveloped coastal area, and of course, underdeveloped northern regions. In case of Serbia, we have overdeveloped capital city and basically the rest of the country more or less lagging behind. So this was one of the issues, or let's say personal motivations, to see how local governments can be financially strengthened and how they can spur some activity and local economic development. Back in early 2000s, both countries officially, formally opted for fiscal decentralization in their official public administration reform strategies, in their official policy documents, and they committed to strengthen financially local governments and local municipalities and cities. So that was primarily, as I will explain later, initiated and led by the donor community. However, as of the onset of economic crisis, in practice, the factual situation started to look differently in 2008 and 2009, and the local government financing system started undergoing drastic changes of the framework, of the legal framework. And these drastic changes of the legal framework basically dramatically changed the frameworks, financial frameworks, within which local governments at the local level operate. And this led to complete legal and financial instability and unpredictability of local finance. It eventually led to a serious decrease of municipal budgets, and it crippled local government ability to plan and to implement any kind of financial and development policies, particularly capital investment plans and so on. So based on this framework that I try to explain, we set the following research question. So we wanted to see what were the major features of the fiscal decentralization process. We wanted to see how the legal framework changed over this period of time. And we've also wanted to see what were the final fiscal effects on municipal revenues and expenditures. Finally, as we noticed that there are some similarities and differences, we wanted to compare these two countries and to see what differences and similarities exist in these two cases. So we opted for a mixed method study. First of all, we wanted to track these legislative changes and do the legal analysis, which we also focused on the policy analysis, and we've also, as I said, tried to measure and to see fiscal effects on municipal revenues and expenditures. As I said, our study was comparative, so these two countries were evolution of the process of fiscal decentralization, and the framework, legal framework on municipal financing was compared in these two countries. And it was also, these two countries were also analyzed vis-a-vis specific pieces of legislation of the EU and Council of Europe on subnational financing, particularly as both countries adopted and incorporated some rules of the Charter of Local Self-Government adopted by the Council of Europe into their internal legislation. So we've analyzed the national legal framework, then we analyzed the municipal bylaws and ordinances on finance and budgets, and we finally try to see the fiscal effects on local revenues and expenditure. This is why I say it's a multi-layer, not multi-level in statistical sense, but multi-layer as it analyzes different layers of legislation. So in addition to applying methods of the legal analysis, we also opted for qualitative research methods. We've done a series of semi-structured in-depth interviews with the key stakeholders, with the mayors, with the donor community representatives, with the representatives of the Ministry of Finance, and so on. And we also applied some quantitative research methods. Jadranka will tell you more later in more details. She has done some statistical analysis, and we've done this fiscal analysis. And more or less, that's it about our analytical approach. So I will tell you now about the context in Serbia. So back in 2000, when the whole process of fiscal decentralization started, it was basically initiated in order to consolidate and stabilize local public finance, to make it more transparent and to make it less politicized. So during the period of 1990s, local governments were severely deprived of their revenues and of their property assets. So basically, they were deprived of their financial and development instruments. So although these were really some major reasons for starting the fiscal decentralization process in order to really strengthen local governments that were financially deprived during the period of Milosevic, the real initiative came from the donor community, not from the local government level, not from the central government level, but from the World Bank, USAID, Council of Europe, and other donor representatives. So this is why I say we can see the so-called projectization of policies in that period, because everything was around projects of fiscal decentralization and local government reform. And we see the two dominant trends. First trend is the phase of what we call fiscal decentralization from 2000 until 2008. And the second phase is the phase of fiscal centralization from 2009 until 2015. So this was, as you can see on this small table, on the example of the city of Belgrade, only between 2000 and 2006, the city of Belgrade revenues grew by 1,000%, almost 1,000%, almost 10 times. So you can see how poor local governments were back in the 90s and in 2000. So what were the major features of these, of this first phase of fiscal decentralization, of this first wave? So during this first phase, major strategic policy and legal documents were adopted. For instance, the major law on local government finance and the law on local self-government, which regulates functions. So local governments got some very important social functions in the social sector. So in addition to their utility and communal services, planning and development, maintenance of the road and utility infrastructure, they also got some important services in the social sector. Preschool education, primary health care, capital maintenance of elementary and high school, and also some operating costs of elementary and high schools. And the new system of local government financing was set up. The most important feature of the new system of local government financing was that municipalities were given the right to fully administer the property tax, to determine the tax base, to determine the tax rate, and to administer and collect the revenues from the property tax. Also, the new system, the politicized system of intergovernmental grants was established, with a clear formula that used certain criteria to different measures and different ways to establish a stable, let's say, an objective horizontal and vertical balance in local government revenues. However, as of 2009, with the onset of economic crisis, Serbia started experiencing this wave of fiscal centralization. So it's interesting that as of 2009, central government started in, changing the legal framework every single year, sometimes several times a year, sometimes with an immediate effect, which disrupts entirely the whole financial and budgetary implementation at the local level. Disrupting public procurement, contracting, capital investments, and so on. So this phase is characterized by two trends. On the one hand, central government started cutting, reducing, changing local municipal revenues. And on the other hand, it started shifting some hidden costs and expenditures onto local level. So the vertical imbalance between revenues and expenditures was created during this process. And this is just a chart, I will not go into details, but this is just a chart to try to track all these expenditures and new mandates. And sometimes these were not new functions, but only some additional costs with already transferred functions on the local level. So these were, for instance, some hidden costs in primary health care or pharmacies, which hindered basically providing primary health care at the local level, some very serious increase of salaries at the local level, which were not administered by the local government, but by the central government, and so on. And on the other hand, we have this chart that shows the changes on the revenue side. So it really looks hysterical. So these changes happened between 2009 and 2015. And different lines of the boxes show how these changes were, whether they were announced to local governments, whether they were completely unannounced, whether they were in the middle of the year, whether they started, their implementation started on January 1st, and so on. So, for instance, government suspended all of the sudden transfers, intergovernmental grants to local level. It took real estate rental income tax from municipalities into central government budgets. It abolished certain local fees and charges, and so on and so on. So I will tell you later what were the reasons behind for such a behavior of the central government. So I will now jump into our findings and conclusions. So our first research questions was, what were the main features of fiscal decentralization in Serbia? So, as I said, we, based on our analysis and on tracking legislation and changes in the legislation, we've noticed two distinct phases. So we can see that there was this trend of fiscal decentralization existed until the beginning of the crisis, and we can see the second phase as of 2009. Our analysis also shows that there is the central government, that the whole process of decentralization was ad hoc decentralization. We can call it ad hoc decentralization because there was no strategic plan on what needs to be transferred onto local level, on how will functional and financial decentralization be synchronized and so on. So there was no systemic approach, and it's visible both on the revenue and on the expenditure side. And sometimes it's interesting that the central government does not recognize that local government budgets are part of integral public finance system, because it sometimes resort to decreasing municipal revenues only in order to balance the central government budget. We see from the process and from these intergovernmental relations that local governments are treated sometimes as aliens, as parastatal bodies that have no any function in performing in delivering public goods and services. And very often, justification, for example, in 2011 and 12, the justification for some of the measures was reducing local fiscal burden on businesses. So central government would abolish certain fees and charges in order to reduce the tax burden, the fiscal burden on businesses. However, at the same time, it increased the revenues that go into central government budgets, such as VAT, excise tax, and so on. So this was not an honest approach. It was not really in order to improve the business climate, but just to tell that it improves the business climate, but on the other hand, it increases central government revenues. We've noticed that there is a complete lack of coordination, horizontal coordination among different ministries. So you never know what some central government agency will do, what kind of mandates or expenditures it will transfer to the local level. So there is no coordination among different ministries and central government agencies. And also there is no coordination or consultation with local governments, I can say, whatsoever. So policies and decisions are unfortunately not informed, and they're not based in any evidence. And this is very unfortunate situation with the current draft law on local government finance that is now in the procedure. And all I can say is that working for the Ministry of Finance on drafting new law doesn't have any access to financial data on municipal revenues and expenditures, believe it or not. So the problem is that central government policies are not based in any ex ante or ex post fiscal analysis, and generally there is the system is featured with the non-transparency of the data, of budgetary data. We had serious problem in obtaining the data on municipal revenues and expenditures. Sometimes databases are inadequate or non-existent or unused or simply non-transparent, which really hinders any kind of scientific analysis and any kind of expert analysis and oversight, control over the system by taxpayers or interested public. When it comes to the changes in the legal framework, we've noticed that with such frequent changes in the legal framework, we notice that there is uncertainty and complete lack of predictability and stability of the legal framework, which is particularly problematic for municipalities, for the framework within which they operate, and for any kind of, as I said, planning and implementing capital investment or any kind of development policies. And the whole legal framework has a very low quality and excessiveness. The matter of the municipal revenue is regulated by dozens of laws and dozens of bylaws, which shows that the government doesn't have a comprehensive approach to regulating the matter of local finance, but a partial approach, and it partially changes certain certain sources of revenues or groups of revenues. The matter of local functions is also regulated by more than 50 laws and a series of bylaws, which is generally not a problem. Of course, the primary healthcare, the healthcare and education and other environmental policy and so on will be regulated by different laws. But the problem is particularly in bylaws, which are sometimes not even published in official gazettes. So you cannot find the regulation because it's not published. And in addition to all these issues with that occur with the legal framework, is the fact that local government does not participate in the legislative process and in the policy-making process. Now, I will not go into these details. We had very specific findings regarding every single group of revenues, on-source revenues of the local governments, shared revenues the central government shares with local governments, and within intergovernmental grants. And if you're interested, I will be happy to discuss it later. But our major finding was that existing system of intergovernmental grants, which was deteriorated during the past 6 or 7 years, simply requires a new formula. And also there is a need for a more balanced revenue sharing between central and local government, because this was something that was also changed during this period. And what we find is an excessive reliance on the property tax. So the major, one of our major findings is that there is a general trend of detaxing, decreasing of any kind of fiscal burden on businesses, and basically shifting the fiscal burden on citizens through the property taxation. So local governments would need some other, also some additional sources of revenues in order to finance these expensive, costly functions that they have in the social sector. Finally, we come to our third research questions on fiscal effect. We find that currently the share of local governments and expenditures in GDP is something 20-something percent lower than at the peak of decentralization. So it was 7.1, now it's 5.6. As I said, there is a vertical imbalance between revenues and expenditures. So we had 11 significant changes of the revenues only in the past 6 years on the revenue side, on the finance. And we also found that there is this disconnect between functional and financial decentralization. When government transfers functions, it doesn't transfer accompanying funds for implementing these mandates. Or it cuts the revenues without finding adequate compensation for reducing or cutting revenues. So this is what we find on the example of the capital city, which is the richest local government in Serbia, and which basically is the driver of economy in Serbia. So total public assets, meaning total current revenues with sale of financial assets and with borrowing, are now on the level of 2005, for instance. And if you see total current revenues and compare 2014 with 2006, you will see that they're much lower. And this is, I must note, because I didn't mention this in my presentation, this is not only due to decrease of revenues because of the crisis. It's around 50%. 50% can be contributed, let's say, to the decrease of the real estate transfer tax or personal income tax and other taxes that depend on the economic activity. The other 50% are the consequence of central government policies and cuts and repeals and changes in the legal framework. Finally, and this is the introduction to our second year research or second phase of our research, we found other negative effects. we found that cities and municipalities experienced substantial volatility of revenues, and they also faced frequent liquidity problems. They were forced to reduce capital investment, and because of the pressure to increase and maintain the operating recurrent costs, we found that they have accumulated arrears and debts to creditors. If eventually their financial capacity reduced their capacity to borrow and their creditworthiness, and we want to see now if and how it compromised the delivery of local public services, because we see that they are not able to focus on any kind of long-term planning. So this is something that we want to research now in the second phase of our. And this is the expenditure side. As you can see, there is a pressure to maintain the same level of current expenditure. However, this is 2013 in comparison to 2006. You can see how dramatically capital expenditure fell in the case of the city of Belgrade. And with this slide, I would like to finish my part of the presentation. I wanted to find the maps that would easily show differences in Serbia. I managed to find the data only on population decrease between two censuses and on personal, on salary net, on net salary, monthly net salary per capita. So in the first image, you can see that only Belgrade, Novi Sad, and Niš, with few exceptions, have an increase in population. All the other red, orange, and yellow municipalities experienced a serious decrease of population. So this is something, as you can see, primarily central and actually you can say for the whole country with these three outliers. But here, the net monthly salary per capita also shows that the activity and income in the city of Belgrade and Novi Sad and few other exceptions, the rest of the country is lagging behind, primarily central, southern, eastern Serbia, and so on. So this is something that we want. We see that maybe a new model of local government financing can spur some capital investment and some development activities at local level, and this will be in our focus of our research now in the next phase. So now Jadranka will tell you more about Montenegro.
Okay, thank you, Sanja. So in the case of Montenegro, we applied the same methodological and analytical approach as in the case of Serbia, and we based, so it covered the legal analysis and economic analysis on analysis of changes of legislation on the on municipal budget, and we used the data we used the database for all existing 21 Montenegrin municipalities for period 2001-2014. As you all probably know, Montenegro is a small country territorially and by number of inhabitants, and also the administrative organization of Montenegro is really simple. So we have central government and we have currently 23 municipalities or local government units. And transition process in Montenegro started in the mid-90s, but the majority of the some structural reform and changes were implemented at the beginning of 2000, including the introduction of Euro, Deutschmark, then later Euro, development of the favorable tax system, creation of the also independent custom system, pension reform, and all others. Based or thanks to this reform, Montenegro until then experienced or recorded a significant and steady economic growth. As you know, in 2006 it gained its independence, but still one of the features of Montenegrin economic situation are regional disparities. So there are the central part and the southern part, part of the country are much more developed than the northern part, and you can see on this table how these differences see expressed in the total, in terms of total income per capita and total budget revenues per capita. With all these changes that were initiated at the beginning of 2000, government also initiated the reform of the public administration by the adoption of the, in year 2003, actually the central government adopted the strategy for reform of the public administration, and by that document it said like two major goals of this reform process, the local government reform from one side and fiscal decentralization. And based on these, or to, in order to achieve these two goals, the government actually in the same year adopted two major pieces of legislation, which were law on local self-government and law on local government finance. Before that, I forgot to say, the whole situation was characterized by the high level of centralization and also the low autonomy of local governments in any aspect. Law on local self-government prescribed the main functions of the local governments, and differently to Serbia, in Montenegro, the local government has only core, so to say, functions which are limited to the provision of utility and communal services, urban development and planning, and also utility and road infrastructure maintenance. So the local governments do in Montenegro do not perform financially demanding functions which are provision of education, health services, and other social services. Law on local government finance, adopted also in 2003, introduced certain set of own source revenues such as the property tax, personal income surtax, and consumption tax. It also made or introduced certain changes in the share in the shared revenues which previously were different, and by the adoption of the law they were set on the flat level. And also it established the equalization fund, which actually contributed to the more transparent transfer of the grants between the central and the local governments. All these changes had a significant effect on the local budget, on the budget of the local of municipalities. So immediately after the adoption, actually, the revenues of the government started to increase. Of course, from 2005 onwards, the economic development actually and economic boom contributed to the increase of these revenues. But what is more important is that actually the introduced changes significantly changed the structure of the total local government revenues. So you can see on this graph, the red are shared revenues. So you can see how from only from 2002 to 2008, the share of shared revenues in total revenues decreased, and how on the other side, share of own source revenues increased from, for example, 20 to 50% in total. So situation from 2002 to 2008 was actually a period of the increase of local government revenues. However, there was opinion that the by different stakeholders that the government did a lot on the central level in terms of the creating a favorable business environment, setting the taxes on the low level, but there are still certain burdens and barriers on the local level, and that these should be somehow removed. Yeah? And on the other side, certain local governments ad hoc actually applied different taxes, which was actually become to be as a signals for the central government that they should actually make certain changes in this area. And in 2006, the government adopted the law on local communal fees, by which it abolished the fees for the three the most profitable industries: telecommunication, electricity, and exploitation of the seashore for business purposes. Also, in 2008 law, the government law on spatial planning, by the changes in this law, the government abolished the construction land use charge, which was significant, so to say, source of the municipal revenues, especially for certain municipalities, for example, on the south. The government, however, these changes, which were mainly aimed, as you see, to abolish certain revenues of the municipalities, happened parallel with the economic crisis, which hit, of course, all countries in Montenegro in 2008. So due to these changes and also due to the economic crisis, the local government budgets started to significantly decrease since 2008. In our study, actually, we try to answer to the question what part of this decrease was due to the changes in the legislation and how significant was that part which was caused by the economic crisis. And we found out that actually these two processes contributed similar or in the same amount to the decrease of the revenue. So 55% was due to the legislative changes, and 50% was due to the decrease of the economic activity, so to say. Realizing actually that only to add that these changes that were introduced by 2008 law were actually the example of the case in which the government actually abolished certain revenues for the local governments without compensating them with another revenues or another sources, which is non-written practice actually, which should not be applied. Changes introduced in 2010 were contrary, actually motivated by somehow supporting local governments to overcome some financial problems in which they are. So, and also pushing local governments to more rely on their own source revenues from one side. So, by these changes, which I will not mention, you can see them on the graph, the government actually wanted to somehow push local governments to rely more on the property tax, but these changes actually were a centralistic step because they actually decreased the number as well as the share of the own source revenues of local governments, and actually pushed the governments to rely more on the funds that they received from the equalization fund and from the shared revenues. Also, immediately these changes affected actually the structure of the local government revenues, and we can see that in 2011 the own source revenues actually shrinked or decreased their share in total revenues. After that, actually, the local government started to use more or rely more on the own source revenues, and the data shows that actually the property tax become important source of their revenues. For example, the share of the property tax or revenues from the property tax was 10% in 2008, and it was almost 35% in 2014, which means that the central government somehow forced or motivated local governments to behave more efficiently. So, parallelly to the analysis of the revenues, we analyzed the expenditures of local governments, and as you see, they had a similar trend as expenditures. However, today's situation is very difficult among Montenegrin municipalities because they have a high level of debt and high levels of arrears, which were caused actually by non-paying certain duties out of revenues that they get, and actually by non-decreasing their current expenditures during the observed period. What were our conclusions? But regarding the research question one, we observed two phases of the fiscal decentralization in Montenegro, one from 2003 to 2008. And the second from 2008 to 2014. The first one was actually marked by the reform of the or the increase of the strengthening the role and the fiscal autonomy of local governments, while the second phase was characterized by several legislative changes, which were one were focused on the abolition of former source taxes, and the second was actually a centralistic step, as we explained. Third, the conclusions related to the research question two are conclusions related to the legal framework, and we found out that the law on local government finance as a basis regulation for the fiscal decentralization is too dependent on the application and adoption of other laws. And also we found out that the legal existence of particular revenue does not necessarily guarantee its practical implementation. And also that local government competencies have not been substantially changed in the second phase, while many sources of the revenues were as you say, abolished without certain compensation. The fiscal effect, you saw it already on the graph. In the observed period, the revenues and expenditures significantly increased, 300%. However, the certain changes, legislative changes, which were implemented in 2008, actually contributed to the effects of the economic crisis. But the final conclusion is that the legal changes are not the main cause of the current very difficult fiscal situation in which Montenegrin municipalities are, but they contributed to this situation by, changes and actually mainly abolition of certain sources of revenues.
So just a few concluding remarks. So there is a remaining fourth question on comparative perspective, and this is our work in progress. You probably noticed, you probably already recognized some differences and similarities. And both countries, what we noticed that the fiscal decentralization in both countries was initiated and led primarily in this early years by the donor community. So what we see is that central government and local government levels didn't have, let's say, ownership of the, or didn't feel the ownership of the process. And both countries applied some similar policies as improving business climate through the reduction of fiscal burden on businesses. Both countries wanted to consolidate and balance central government budgets in the times of crisis. In the both cases, we have, due to these specific cuts in local government revenues, accumulation of arrears and debt at the local level, and so on and so on. But this is something that we are currently developing, and this is our work in progress, and this will be a basis for our next research, for our second phase of research, that will try to measure, to see the impact of these changes and the framework within which local governments operate on their specific local economic development and local fiscal policies. So we will focus only on the city of Belgrade due to the limitation of data. We will focus only on the city of Belgrade. And in the case of Montenegro, we will have three municipalities, Podgorica as the capital city, and one southern and one northern municipality. So thank you for having the patience.
Thanks a lot of information there. I will immediately open up to the floor, and I will chip in some of my questions later. Let's take a couple of questions if it's time. Perhaps I could. You first.
I actually got three questions.
Okay, give us two.
Yeah, give me two. Okay. Thank you. I really enjoyed the discussion. I did my PhD on decentralisation in Macedonia, and I did a lot of research on fiscal decentralisation in Estonia. So some of my research findings are sort of informing these questions. You start off by saying about the rationale for fiscal decentralisation, and you didn't mention that fiscal autonomy of municipalities was a rationale, which is interesting. And I just wondered whether you felt, with all these changes, whether the fiscal autonomy of municipalities, and what I mean by that is how much control they actually have over the money that they have, you know, the flexibility they have to spend the money, has actually increased or decreased as a result. Because it's not always that clear cut. You can have a bigger budget, but it's all earmarked, you know, and you can't do anything with it, so actually it's quite hidden. My second question is, it's very clear the phase one and phase two, starting off with decentralisation and then changing again. And I have to admit, I'm not very familiar with politics in Serbia or Montenegro, and I was wondering if there were any political changes going on at that time that may have actually been a reason for those changes. I found in Macedonia that the excuse of fiscal crisis was actually a bit of a convenient excuse, and actually it was political parties and the changes in the balance at the central and the local level. Fiscal parties at the central level are more likely to devolve fiscal competencies if they're represented at that level, or see themselves soon to be represented at that level. And if they're not at that level, at the municipal level, then they don't. I just wondered whether there were political changes at that time. And I have another question.
Okay.
About equalisation.
Tell us the question.
I found in Macedonia that there was a really heavy dependence on property taxes, and the result of that was that you exacerbate urban and rural economic disparities. And sometimes you don't have an economic equalisation policy at all, or in the case of Macedonia, you have a bizarre process that actually rewards the urban municipalities at the expense of rural. And I just wondered if that was something that you'd noticed at all or consider looking at in the future.
Okay, thank you for your question. So first question was, what was the rationale for starting the fiscal decentralization process, right? So back at the time, no one was discussing about the economic arguments of fiscal decentralization. We will provide better local, probably we will increase mobilization and tax collection at the local level. This was one of the rare arguments, but no one was talking about a better allocation of resources or political or other economic arguments, because these processes, for instance, decentralization on different functions, on education, on healthcare, these were all disconnected processes within separate agencies, a separate ministry, so this was the problem. So no one was really doing any kind of serious analysis saying, okay, this is what we really want to decentralize, to shift to the local level, and these are resources that municipalities need in order to perform these functions. So no one has ever done such an analysis. So the rationale was, in case of Serbia, basically to consolidate the system, to strengthen local governments that were really deprived back in the 90s. And to make the equalization formula more objective and depoliticized, because no one knew back in the 90s and early 2000s how grants were distributed among municipalities. It was a pretty partisan approach. Whoever is in power gives more money to the local governments who have the same political parties in coalition. So the rationale was basically just to strengthen and to consolidate and depoliticize the system. Yes, they got their fiscal autonomy significantly increased because they got the property tax. So they have the right to set the tax base and to set the tax rate, of course, within the limits of the law on property tax, and to collect all the revenue for themselves, so they don't share it back with the central government. Equalization fund was established and introduced for vertical balance. It introduced a formula that included education, a number of schools, number of pupils in the school, number of preschool of structures, buildings, and so on and so on. So it objective. The formula was pretty objective, and it took into account differences So we had a part that was vertical coordination, vertical balance, based on the functions that local governments perform, but also horizontal equalization was, there was a part of the formula that concentrates on the horizontal equalization. Political changes didn't have, were not a factor in Serbia. Every single party, every single minister of finance had a new idea of how local government financing system should look like. So it was not, in case of Serbia, every single party introduced some changes that reduced local government revenues. Both Democratic Party and G17, that is URS, URS, and now the new party, SNS, and so on. So it was not a partisan issue. The issue of distributing earmark funds, earmark grants, is a subject to partisan issues because municipalities that from the whose mayors and ruling coalition is from the governing party, they get more earmark transfers. But when it comes to these non-earmark transfers, the formula should be depoliticized and objective. And you asked about
and just urban and rural disparities in property tax.
Well, in Serbia, yes, rural areas have serious difficulties because they cannot assess the market value of the real estate because there is no basically market. No one sells and buys properties, you know, in Trgovište or in some very rural municipality in Serbia. So there is a serious problem in assessing the tax base.
You want to add something?
Similar situation also in Montenegro.
Sonia had a question and then.
Right, so I'm just going to zoom out into a bit of a bigger picture. Thanks for the talk, very interesting. And I, so I'm wondering from the perspective of, I mean, policy implications is pretty clear, like don't make so many changes and do all that. But I'm curious about, can we say something about sort of weak state capacity and fiscal decentralization from this? Can we conclude that it doesn't really work and that it's actually maybe a country that has weak capacity to implement it is better off without even trying to do that? Could we even sort of go there? And linked to that, I'm sort of wondering about the role of the EU in these processes and EU donations particularly, because if they can sort of fill in the gaps at the local level. I was curious in the Montenegro slide that the donations started going down from 2007, so I'm sort of wondering, you know, whether EU funding has anything to do with the coping mechanisms of the municipalities, sort of amidst the fact that they're losing money and having to deliver services. So just curious, sort of the relationship to the EU funds and general perspective.
Thanks. Wait, wait. next question.
Okay. Yes. No, it's very actually similar to that one, because I think there's a huge trade-off here, because on one hand, I can see why socially and economically it makes sense to develop like the local communities. But then from the other perspective, if you don't have capacity, there is lots of corruption at the local level, it doesn't really make sense to do it. And then, and like you said, you're not able to collect data at the local level. So do you really want to give autonomy and the money to manage the municipality to not able to collect data? My friend invests money in the government bonds. And like when we think about a fiscal policy, we want to make sure we have the data. And like better centralized, and if you have a better fiscal control, then you can, you know, that's much better situation than if you have something to highly centralize and fiscal control.
Okay, so decentralization, yes or no? So I would be careful in just generalizing decentralization, yes or not. I would see how, for instance, my gut feeling is that primary healthcare, no. But I cannot say because I didn't do any in-depth analysis of decentralization of healthcare services. Preschool education, yes. It's something, kindergartens and something that is very local and there is no problem. There were serious problems in sharing the expenditures between the elementary and high schools, and I would, for instance, my sense and analysis would probably show that it should be shifted back to the central level. So it depends on what functions we talk about, and it depends on what sources of revenues we talk about. result of the decentralization of the property tax is excellent. It's much higher collection, for instance. When it was administered by the central government, the less than 30% of properties of the real estate was registered, was in inventory, so people were not even registered for, their properties were not even registered. So municipalities increased the tax base. They increased the collection of the property tax. So I would say that it was a good good policy to decentralize property tax. Revenue sharing or personal income tax was, for instance, assessed by many experts as something which is very problematic because central government increased the share from 40 to 80%, which destabilized the central government budget. So it depends really on what specific function or source of revenue we talk about. So regarding EU project, EU policies in the...
Funding.
Well, at the very beginning of the process, USAID, World Bank, and Council of Europe had a very influence, and they supported a lot of this decentralization and local government reform. EU was more oriented back then towards establishing regional regional development agencies that would focus on regional development. However, they these two processes, they didn't see these two processes as mutually exclusive, so they supported a lot capacity building of local governments, and they still support a lot development and capacity building of their local tax administrations and so on. So they do a lot of work at the local level, and they do support projects aimed at decentralization and so on. When it comes to corruption, I would be very careful. We got the data from municipalities, but we didn't get the data from central government. So this was, we got rejected from the Ministry of Finance that redirected us to its Treasury Department. The Treasury Department rejected us, and it redirected us to the Ministry of Finance. We got the data actually from the city of Belgrade and a couple of other municipalities. But the problem is that we wanted integrated database that has everything already cleaned and in the same format. We got different formats from the different local governments. And the issue of corruption, at least in the literature, there are different evidence. The World Bank and Shah and Ivanina did a lot of work on effects of decentralization on corruption, and their evidence on the large data set is that it actually decreases corruption. And this is the argument whenever you talk, there is this natural tension between central and local level, and central government officials will always say they're incapable and corrupt. So whenever parties that whose programs are based on decentralization really come into power, they start decentralizing processes. So there is kind of a natural tension between central and local level, no matter what party we talk about. So mayors will be always on the one side of the table, regardless of the affiliation to their parties.
No, I also may add that actually I think that in the case of Montenegro, the whole process was seen at the beginning as a part of decentralization, as a part of the overall reforms which were implemented at the beginning of 2000 and which were aimed at decreasing the role of the state and the whole increase of the or central state, the whole set of the reforms which covered also the privatization, the openness of the country, and that's actually that was one of the main reasons for the implementation of the decentralization process. But also through that process, I think that the local governments get the chance to show how actually efficient they are in maintaining the local budgets. Unfortunately, I think think that in the case of Montenegro, due to different reasons, among which the political, but also economical and other ones, are present significant factors, they show that they are, in many cases, are not so able to maintain actually the budgets on the local level efficiently, and to especially when it comes to the expenditures, because they were in the situation, especially from 2005 to 2006-07, when the whole country was booming due to the foreign direct investment. They were in the situation that, as you saw, significantly their revenues grow up. They immediately increase their expenditures, not only on the services that they provide, but on the salaries also. When the revenue started to decrease, they didn't react. They just continued to spend as they used to be in these good years. So they didn't, I think, while the center government reacted much faster to these changes, so that they significantly decreased. So I think that due to that kind of behavior, they are now in the situation that they have really big financial problems. But I also think that these reasons that you mentioned, political and other, also play a part in this process also.
Okay. Next round of questions, Bernard?
I was reminded of two things. I was reminded of...
question, please, Van Spitz.
I was reminded of the Baltic countries, which I had looked at, and the attempt to decentralise in what were actually very small geographical areas, and therefore the meaningfulness of decentralisation. Why was it being done in areas where... they were already pretty small and pretty... They used to be sort of sub-regions of something much bigger. So that was one thing that struck me. The efficiency, therefore, that is associated with these very tiny units is also something which concerns me. But I was also struck by some certain similarities to things much closer to home. So that, I mean, local governments in this country have problems with tax bases which are based on property values, which, you know, kind of are actually not set by markets, but were set kind of administratively 20-something years ago. And that is meaningless as probably some of the property values that you're talking about. But there is also this problem that is associated with decentralization, which is the increase, in fact, in inequalities, and the fact that some of those places which have the greatest need for services, if they are being required to finance them locally, have in fact the least capacity. And the example which I would draw is this suggestion that there be a 2% increase that local authorities can put upon their rates to deal with problems of older people and the provision of care for older people. And in fact, if you actually look at the relationships, those who most need to raise the money are those with the least capacity and the least wealth on which they could do this. So I don't think it's a peculiar problem to where you're talking about. I think it's a more general problem.
Okay,
thanks.
Can I?
Yes, yeah.
I would like to ask you if you have done some analysis of the next trends about, I mean, the revenues for the local authorities, personal income taxation, I mean, IRUP marks and so on. What are the trends you are, let's say, analyzing in this moment? Because, for example, my experience, let's say, as consultant in investments, there is a lot of competition among municipalities to attract new investments because they rely a lot on the state taxation on personal incomes, because it's a stable income for the municipality to have this 10%, you know, and for them it's what I have realized also in the last months. I mean, that for them it's very important, and we have some experience like that one in Novi Sad, where the city is investing in cooperation with some investors relying on the future revenues from personal income taxes. I'm speaking about investment of LIA, obviously. It would be interesting to understand what are, I mean, the main trends you are analyzing and in your researches.
They will be in real danger if they rely on the future for human threats.
Yeah,
but I will discuss this. Yeah.
Okay, let's take another question by Will as well, and then with you.
One of the most remarkable differences between the two studies is the unwillingness of the Ministry of Finance in Serbia to release data on the local government finance, and the fact that in Montenegro you've got completely access to the data.
Yes.
And how do you explain that difference?
Thank you.
Okay.
I had a friend at the ministry. We don't know. We were told. I think yes. We were told that the climate.
I remind you that we're recording this.
Yeah, I better think. Better not answer that question. So let me first answer the question regarding competition of municipalities. So municipalities are not allowed. So this is where they are restricted in their fiscal autonomy. They're not allowed to waive, for instance, property tax or certain fees and charges to investors. They can give discount to the land development fee, which finances the land equipment, land development, but under the criteria set by the law on spatial planning. So this is not something that it cannot create race to the bottom, because they are not allowed to exempt and decrease all their own source revenues in order to support the businesses. So they can compete in providing better services to businesses or equipping industrial zones, for instance, that have already equipped parcels with primary and secondary infrastructure and so on. But when it comes to personal income tax, this is not something that is under the auspices of the local government. Personal income tax is a centrally administered tax. Local governments receive 80% of the collected tax, but they don't administer it, and they cannot influence the collection of the personal income tax because they do not have any inspections, for instance, that can raise the employment official register employment and so on. So it's all centrally organized and administered. So when they rely, there is a clear pressure from the central government to decrease the share of local government revenues from 80 back to 40 or 50%. So if Novi Sad relies on future revenues from personal income tax, they better be careful. So that's
one comment on the size of the country and these reasons for the fiscal decentralization. As you mentioned, yes, that is the question. We are small, and why we are doing decentralization, is that efficient? But I have to say that, for example, in the case of Montenegro, we 2 years ago we had 21, now we have 23 municipalities. So it is not decentralization, but it means that new municipalities are emerging, which is actually politically pretty much led process. So there are certain groups and stakeholders which actually advocate for getting this kind of the autonomy and fiscal autonomy also by establishing the new municipalities. And regarding the relying on future income, I think that in some cases in Montenegro there are, I think, examples in which they rely. For example, the southern municipalities are, of course, of the bigger interest for foreign currency investors than the rest of the country. Somehow these municipalities do not charge these companies, for example, land development fee. because I think they rely that these investors will come in and with their businesses, and that they rely on the future future revenues that they will gain through different kinds of. Also, they I would say rely not only on the future revenues but also the impact of these investments of the overall situation in the town or in the municipality. And also there are examples that the smaller municipalities, which are not so attractive for foreign direct investors, use actually the room and the space that the law gives to them to compete between themselves and attract, for example, local investors. So there is example of the Danilovgrad municipality near Podgorica, which is in the central town, which by different kind of setting the rates, for example, on the of the property tax and etc., actually tries to attract people to work and to live there in that municipality. And also regarding the data, I have to say that we actually, not because that, but I have to say that, but we actually get the data because they are available now, really, all the data. And actually there are very good examples that municipalities have the on their websites, actually, the whole databases of the revenues and expenditures, for example, for the last 15 years, which is the case for the capital city of Podgorica. But we, after we submitted the request, we easily actually get all the data that we required. That is really a big improvement, because I remember that 20 years ago when we started to work on this analytical job, so to say, we really were we couldn't get the data. I think that me and my colleagues have been sitting like for days in the front of the offices in the Ministry of Finance, and we were not able to get any kind of data. But at those times, I mean, the basic data were not able to come, like how big the budget is, total budget, some figures about the total budget, not so detailed categories about the local government. So in terms of the availability of the data, I think the situation has significantly changed in our countries, but I think that we still have to work much on the use of this data. So I think that the policymakers have data, but they still do not use them for their policy decision making, so for different reasons.
So, unlike Montenegro, Serbia is not transparent in that sense. So, although there it should be, and it is official public information, so it should be accessible to public. We got rejected from the Ministry of Finance with official administrative decision, and we also got rejected from the Treasury Department. The Treasury, it is interesting that the Treasury Department, first, when we first submitted the first request, we required the whole data set for all 145 local government units in Serbia. We got rejected. And we were told that the Ministry of Finance, that the Treasury Department, Treasury Administration doesn't have data on municipal revenues and expenditures. So that was their official explanation. And they also said, in addition, that we've requested a huge volume of data. So then we decided to make a sample and to try to get some stratified sample of 12 municipalities plus the city of Belgrade. And we submitted a second request to the Treasury Department. And then we were told that, yes, they have the data, although they told us first time that they don't have the data, but we are asking for a large volume of data which they cannot process in a short period of time, and we got rejected. As I said, we got rejected also by the Ministry of Finance, and our request was forwarded to the Officer for Public Information, because this is official procedure. However, the Officer for Public Information doesn't have any enforcement mechanisms to go into the Ministry of Finance and the Treasury Department and see if they have the data in their computers and give it to us. So this is the case of Serbia. So we finally got the data from the local governments. But it's not only, it's not that we are the ones, we are the ones who got rejected. We are not the only ones, actually. The working group that was set up by the Ministry of Finance to draft the new law on local government finance didn't get data from the Ministry of Finance. So they are writing black letters on black letters on the paper that are not grounded in any kind of financial analysis. Actually, the whole process ended up in that way that the working group didn't participate in drafting the new law.
Okay.
So that's the official.
We have a bit of time for another round of questions. I want to ask a question as well, and just to say we're not advertising Windows 10, but it is it popped up. So let me squeeze in my question, and then Tena has a question as well. Sanya, you said told us in the beginning of your presentation that. So I have a couple of quotes that there's no coordination and mechanism and planning for the process of fiscal decentralization. And then later on you said also a few times that the legal system is very complex, many laws, many bylaws. And I want to ask you whether this is an assessment of the part. So is this unique? No. Is this more so in this particular case? Or does it characterize the whole system? So you could be talking about any legal framework of any process, and you would be still saying that, you know, this excessive legalism, you know, so too many bylaws, you could say very weak mechanism of coordination, of monitoring. So, but I'm saying, you know, mm-hmm. anywhere in the Balkans, you could have said this. Do you think that the problem is particularly sort of accentuated in the case of fiscal decentralization? Before you answer, Tena. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you how expensive is it to run all these municipalities? So, because it strikes me that in countries like Italy, which is a country which is, you know, still much more economically well off than Montenegro and Serbia are, there was a big debate on reducing the, you know, the municipalities and getting on cutting these costs, really. So, I mean, I was wondering, you know, how, if that was something that you looked into at all, how much, you know, does this come into the whole picture? And, you know, if we came to the conclusion that actually running these, you know, having this decentralization doesn't give us real economic benefits as opposed to, or not proved economic benefits as opposed to the central government, then do you have any suggestions as, you know, as regards to the motivations of doing it? Because if Jadranka was just saying that there are more municipalities popping out in Montenegro, one thing that comes to my mind is that maybe, you know, it's one of the ways in which, well, the central government gives jobs or, you know, sort of patronage and these sort of things. So I wanted to know your opinions on that.
So, vertical coordination between central and local government level, and well, yes, I can say that it applies in case of Serbia. I cannot say for other countries, but in the case of Serbia, yes, it applies for almost all sectors. And when I say fiscal decentralization, I also mean decentralization of expenditures, that is, decentralization of mandates, functions to local level. So whatever happens in the Ministry of Education...
What I mean is that, you know, if you think, irrespective of decentralization, health policy, military expenditure, you know, whatever, investment, industrial policy, I would expect, I don't know for the mm-hmm. fact that, you know, as an example, Serbia would have excessive legalism and not mm-hmm. very strategic vision,
yes.
and thinking and structures. So what I'm saying is that, you know, would you say that in the process of fiscal decentralization we see more complicated legal framework than in the process mm-hmm. of, let's say, education policy?
Yes, because education is one sector. Fiscal decentralization and local government has role in performing a whole range of public services and public goods. local government applies 60, two-thirds to three-quarters of all pieces of legislation, of all regulations in a country, in every country. So with particularly now with the increased obligations towards EU, where local governments will have much bigger role, it would be necessary to increase their participation in the process, in the policy making and legislative process in all sectors that tackle them. So yes, I would say yes, this is the case. This is particularly problematic because this is not a sectoral issue. This is an issue of the level of government that has to regulate and implement and enforce legislation at the local level, and this is why they have to be included in the process. So this is the difference between sectors and basically the level of government. So how expensive is to run? Well, Serbia didn't have any reforms of administrative map in the previous in the previous period. So Serbia didn't increase the number of municipalities in the past 20, 25 years. Unlike Croatia and unlike Albania, that now, as far as I know, face serious problems because there are so many municipalities in Croatia. I think there are 400 and something or 500 and something municipalities. Albania has 600 and something municipalities. In addition to the local level, Croatia has regional governments. So if you approach it in that way, yes, you can say there are so many municipalities that employ these partisan staff and so on, and regional governments, etc. In Serbia, the situation with administrative map, with administrative territorial organization didn't change. So, and when it comes to the costs, no one has ever done how much certain specific public function costs and how much, I don't know, primary healthcare or primary education or preschool education really costs. So this is not, there is no cost analysis, so we cannot say how much really central government needs for performing this public function or how much local government, how much money local government needs in order to perform this public function.
Yes, okay.
Nothing. Maybe just to add regarding the. I completely agree with Sanja. I think that this is the number of the of the laws, sub laws, is particularly eminent for this area. Because by its nature it covers, I mean, so many aspects, and we saw that through our legal analysis that actually, and you saw it, that actually changes in the, for example, law on concessions, law on forestry, for example, also tackles and have implications to local finances. So you have really the number of laws covers this area. But what is the main feature, I would agree with you, for all, no matter to the level of or number of laws and regulation that exist, is that actually in all areas we lack monitoring, evaluation and monitoring of the implementation of different policies. So still, not only in this area but in others, we still do not monitor the implementation of certain policies, and we are still not measuring the effect of certain policies. And we are now in the process of EU integration, and you know, the strategies are just pumping up on all in all areas, and everything needs to be somehow synchronized and monitored. And I think that process will actually, we will have to face it with in the future.
Right. Okay, I have to stop here. We run out of time. Before thanking our speakers, let me personally wish you full success with the continuation of the project, and to hopefully come back and present the final results at some other point in time. Okay. Thanks for staying with the seminar, and let's
thank you.